And I'm sure you enjoy these 3 days with Brother Mike.
Great. Thanks very much, Celia. Om Shanti, good morning. Thanks for the introduction, which means you'll all be emailing me for the materials, I'm sure. So first of all, thank you very much for coming. Thanks for choosing to spend the next 3 mornings together, as you know. These are kind of pilot courses after many years of, I think, both subtle and not so subtle requests for some special programs for us from around the world to focus on specific subjects. And so these next 3 days of the four topics is a little bit of an experiment, as you know. And this particular course, as you also know, the original title of the course, I don't think it found its way onto the communication materials, but the original title was What's in the Way is the Way. I don't know how that translates. It makes kind of sense in English, but what's in the way is the way. And I think I shared the other morning this idea that we're all in a process, and that process we often refer to and read about this thing called the spiritual journey. And we're all on our journey, except it's the journey where we don't go anywhere. Sometimes it's called the journey of 1 second and no distance, in which you are guaranteed to lose all your baggage. That's not British Airways, it's the spiritual journey. And you could say that the process or the journey is a journey of becoming. And essentially we all know we're here to learn how to be consistently and stably soul conscious, which means we are becoming our self again, or the self is coming to be itself again. Be coming again. Sorry about the translators. And then when you arrive, you are being. So we're becoming to be. And when we arrive, we are being ourselves again. And so the process of the journey and the destination, becoming and being, are actually really one. And the purpose of this little course, these 3 days, is a little bit, you know, when you sometimes make your journey to Mount Abu from faraway lands, you encounter obstacles. You know, funny airline schedules and delays and difficult people who want to change their minds and get off planes, and so many sometimes obstacles on the way. But for me personally, there's only really one obstacle on our spiritual journey, the journey to being ourself, and that's our old friend, the ego. So these 3 days are really about understanding exactly what the ego is and how we create it, how we actually create the ego and therefore create our own obstacle. So some of you know that while I like the ideas and the insights that we gain from the process of becoming, I'm also interested in the mechanics. I like to see how things work a little bit in detail. So this first morning, this morning, is the mechanics of the ego. How we create it and how it affects us and how we affect ourselves. And essentially, it's the ego that's in the way. And then tomorrow, we explore possibly the subject we don't really explore very much as BKs on our spiritual journey, and that is the subject of emotion. And I'm aware that in some languages there aren't two words for emotions and feelings. There's just one word. And I'm aware that we don't really talk much about the emotions that we feel. So again, tomorrow, it's an exploration really to see how we create our emotions, how they affect us, the the difference between emotions and feelings? How do I untangle the two? How do I discern the difference? And how do I become a master of my feelings again? Because ultimately self-mastery is the ability to choose what you feel in any given situation. So tomorrow is about our emotions. And then the third day, third session, third morning, is to do with, I guess, why we do what we do as BKs, as souls on their journeys. And as you know, that we have a code or a set of what's sometimes called maryadas. Some people see them as the instruction manual. Other people see them a little bit more gently as the guidelines for our spiritual awakening. But many of us, when we arrive, don't really understand why we have to follow the maryadas. And we just do it, either obediently or faithfully or because it just feels right. And so on the third morning, we look at the deepest reason, the deep reasons why the maryadas are slightly important. And it's to do with the spiritual laws. I think I mentioned the other morning, many years ago, Baba mentioned for the first time, he said, "You are the lawmakers." And when we all heard that one evening when Baba came, we all went away the next day. What does he mean? What does that mean? What's he saying? What's he really saying? You are the lawmakers. And so, what does that mean? How come each one of us, he's making responsible to bring law back into this world? And when you understand what those laws are, then you begin to understand why the maryadas are the maryadas. So on the third morning, we will explore the spiritual laws, the laws of consciousness, that we are all actually, in our own process of becoming, we're all bringing back into the reality, the context of the world. So that's on the third day. In between, in the process of each session, I will share with you quite a bit of information, I guess. But I'll also break it up, as many of you know, with little exercises and little conversations and little churnings and little reflections, I guess, to give you a chance to kind of see for yourself some of the things that I share with you. I often say I'm eminently interruptible, but I'm not sure whether I should say that with 200 people in the room. But I guess if something's not clear, please just stick your hand up and we'll have time for questions and answers, for sure, near the end of the session. But in between, if something's really not clear, and I'll ask you if you have any questions, please feel free to shout. We won't do a roving microphone, just shout it out and I'll repeat the question, because I do prefer to interact in the process and not just lecture. What else is there? I think that's it really. As you know, we're kind of going straight through till 1 o'clock in theory, but if I notice the brain cells dying a little, then we'll have some stretch break perhaps, or toilet break or water break or whatever. Let's see how it kind of feels. See how you feel. If you feel demanding of a break, then shout. That's great. I think that's it really. It's probably nice just to begin in our traditional way, with a few moments of silence and just a little quietness and a chance to connect internally and with the room, as is our tradition. That's great, thank you. So I know you're probably aware that the world is awash with courses and workshops and seminars and books, and we're flooded with ideas and psychology and spirituality and There's a million coaches looking for coachees. It's the way the world is now. Totally interconnected. Time and space has collapsed. But the underlying search, it goes on. And usually the end point of many of these courses, workshops and seminars in the world, the end point and the promise is that if you come and you attend, by the end, you will be very clear about your purpose in life, the purpose of life. So I'm going to break convention, and I'm going to start with the end. And I'm going to ask you, because I'm kind of interested, the question. What do you see, believe, have realized? Doesn't really matter. But if someone was going to ask you, what do you think the purpose of life is? It's not too early for that, is it? It's not too early. Are we okay with that question? What for you is the purpose of life? If you could encapsulate it, what would you say if someone asked you on a plane, on a train, you get to know them for 5 minutes, and you ask, you know, what is the purpose of life? What do you turn and say to that person? I'd like you actually to have a conversation with your neighbor to begin with. And I'd like to see if you find any agreement with each other. Yeah. Next person next to you. Or if there's two of you in a few chairs, that's three of you in a few chairs, that's fine too. But it's just nice to have a little conversation. And what for you is the purpose of life? And go for it. You've agreed already? Oh, okay. Too clever for me. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Could I ask just for those, how many people agreed exactly with the person they were talking to? How many people agreed exactly? Precisely. Wow, so many. And yet so many of you were having an argument. So then what is it? If everyone's so clear, what is it? Purpose of life is? Yes. To experience true love and happiness and peace. To experience true love, happiness and peace. To feel true love, happiness and peace. Okay, anyone else? Does everyone agree with that? Sorry? Leave some legacy. Serve. Purpose of life is to serve. Yes. To live our life here and to establish relationships. Fantastic. Yes. Freedom. To be free. So far, we have 6 different answers. This is very interesting. Happiness. We've had that one. To maximize our potential. Well, I'm on one of those courses again. Come and maximize your potential. Fantastic. To make ourselves better. Okay, why? Is there something wrong with you? Okay. Yes? To remember to see the perfection that we are. Very deep and profound. Fantastic. Yes. To live life. Nice and simple, eh? Don't have to think too much about that one. Just to live life. Yes. Life, to live and to learn. To live and to learn. Yes, right at the back. You have to shout. To experience happiness. Fantastic. Someone down here? Self-service and serve the world. Service again. We've had service, yes. To joy, to experience joy. Just to feel joy, yes. Rabbi in the corner. Shout. Find God, to find God. So we've got 12 answers and they're all completely different. So the next question is, are you all doing the same Raj Yoga? It's interesting, isn't it? It's very interesting. So for the next 3 days, you must remember that I'm just sharing my own perceptions and they shouldn't be yours. I'm not here to convince you or to make you see what I see. Because, you know, as I learned very, very early on in my own Brahmin life, if you have 20 answers from the audience and they're all different, everyone is right. Everyone's right in that moment. So for me, the answer is in one word. And it took me a long time to see this, really. And it's one word. Creativity. Yeah? I am here. We are here to be creative. Now, when we hear that word, we tend to think poetry and painting and sculpting, and because that's how we associate the process of creativity with making something physical and tangible. But for me, at a spiritual level, we are here to restore our creativity, the power, the energy, the impulse of our creativity. It's a little bit like when you look at nature. Nature is constantly fulfilling its purpose. It doesn't think about it. What's it constantly doing? Creating and recreating, creating and recreating. And in the middle, it lets go. It destroys, it lets go. So for me, it's about being creative. Is that okay? Are we okay with that? That kind of encapsulates some of the things that you were saying. And every single day, we are being challenged, for me again, to create three things. Three things. A little bit like Baba keeps reminding us, you are the ones. You are the special ones, the only ones, the special clan in the world to lead the world back to being themselves. You're leaders. We're all kind of leaders. Not because we have a position or we have privileges or we have special resources, but we're leaders, by example, by the very fact we are waking up to who we are. And so as every leader knows, there's only one way to lead, and that's by example, because there's always someone watching. And when you have the consciousness that there's always someone watching, then it magnifies within your consciousness the importance of your creativity. Because all the time you are creating yourself as an example for others. We don't put creating the self together so much. But in the context of our spiritual journey, that's what we're doing. And there's three things which you are constantly creating every single day. I'm kind of trying to time this for traffic controls. After a while, you begin to realize you're going to be interrupted by music. And three things. That's not bad timing, actually. A moment to reflect. What do you think those three things might be? So, those three things, and see if this chimes with you, see if this makes sense for you. The three things we're being challenged to create is, number one, vision. Number two is decisions. And number three is precision. And in many ways, all of leadership, whatever the context you find yourself in, spiritual or non-spiritual, can be summed up in the creation of these three things. Not just occasionally, but every single day. When I use the word vision, I don't mean a vision of some future, because on the spiritual journey, there, in one sense, is no future. If you have a vision of your future now, you're having it now. So that vision is coming alive in your consciousness right now. And in a spiritual context, what God asking us to do is to revision, recreate, restore ourselves to our original state of being. It's just that we can't do it in 1 second. And so if you watch yourself during the average day, you'll notice you keep allowing a vision to take place in your consciousness, a sense of what that perfect me, that beautiful me, that original, eternal me looks like, feels like, maybe is acting like. So every single day we're being challenged to bring that vision into our awareness, not with the thought, oh, I have to create a vision, like I have to go and paint a painting, but it's like as you meditate, the process of meditation is allowing that original sense of who you are to emerge into your awareness. And you have a little vision of that. And then the process of becoming is that as we practice our spiritual practices, that vision becomes stronger and stronger, and if you like, it lasts longer and longer in our awareness. Until one day, you're there. For those of you who've been around for a few years, you'll know when you first come, the mind is everywhere, there's interruptions, there's feelings, there's not much stability for very long, except perhaps when we come and sit in this gathering. And suddenly you get a deep sense, a deep awareness, vision of you, of the self. And it's very attractive, and it feels right. And you've just created it in your own consciousness. And then you lose it. We react. Yeah, we want something, we don't want something, and we kind of lose that, and then we have to bring it back, allow it to come back, nurture it back. So the first thing that we're being asked to create is this vision. Don't get vision mixed up with aim, yeah, or goal. It's not some future achievement. It's an awareness that we're creating in the moment now. And these 3 days is about what gets in the way of that, what stops that from becoming a deep, rich, broad, real sense of who I am, what I am. So the second thing we have to create, and any leader in any context has to create every single day, is this thing called decision. And all the time you are creating decisions. Now, you're either creating them consciously, informed by a deeper wisdom, or you're creating them reactively, informed by old sanskars and habits, old desires and preferences. And so all the time you're creating little decisions. I'll go to class, I won't go to class. Big decisions, I'll leave the BKs and join someone else, or whatever. So little and big. Life-changing and day-changing decisions. And these are things that we create. And so, am I creating consciously, informing those decisions with my wisdom, or am I creating them reactively? Are they informed by my emotions, by my desires, by my preferences? Wow. So this is the second thing, that we're constantly creating decisions. And the third thing is precision. And precision refers to my communication with the world around me, my relationship. And all the time, we are creating our communication. And so, how accurate is it? How appropriate is my communication with those around me? And so, the three kind of dimensions on a daily basis of creativity, real creativity. Now, the reason we have this camera here is for those at the back to see if they can... Can you see this at the back? Is this clear at the back? A little bit? Is it clear enough? Or is this helping? Because if this is not helping, then... Is this helping? A little bit at the back? Okay. Because of the light, less light. Yeah, less light. Okay. Well, I don't think we can do much about the light. Let's try it again and see if we can... Yes, well, black and white tends to be the most contrasting. So every day, what influences your decisions every day is something called intelligence. And intelligence is very simply defined as using what you know, using what you know in the right way, in the right situation, at the right moment. So intelligence is using what you know in the right way, the right situation, at the right moment. And each of us, essentially we carry and we learn to develop four levels of intelligence. And each of these levels of intelligence is feeding into our creativity. So depending on the quality of your intelligence, so will be the quality of your creation. At school we learn what's called rational intelligence. And rational intelligence is essentially the use of thinking. We think things through. Someone says, Mike, what are you going to do? Mike says, I don't know. Give me 30 minutes. I need to think this through. I use logic, I use rationality, I use reason, I draw on experience, I draw other people's experience. It's very slow, it's not very efficient, it's very noisy in the head, and it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy to think things through. And people get very stressed trying to make decisions rationally. Shall I do this? Shall I do that? What will happen if I do this? What will happen if I do that? So they're creating their decisions rationally. And it's a very crude way to create. Then someone came along and said, it's very slow, it's very inefficient. Why don't we start developing and using the stuff that women have and men don't? Otherwise known as intuition. And you could go on a course and you could spend 5 days learning to allow your intuitive energy inform your decisions. And I might say I'm going this way, not that way. You say, Mike, why are you going this way, not that way? Mike says, I don't know why, it just feels right. So I'm allowing my feelings to inform the decisions that I'm creating. And thoughts and feelings, most of us, most of the time, don't know the difference between the two. We can't untangle two. And if you ask most successful business people, entrepreneurs, inventors, even scientists, they'll tell you their best decisions are made intuitively, usually in the bath. Why? Very relaxed. And when you relax your body in the bath, well, you don't need to do this, but the mind sometimes follows. Yeah. And so when the mind relaxes, when the thinking stops, I can then hear the voice, the subtle, quieter voice of my feelings, my intuition, my inner tutor, sometimes called your innate wisdom, the wisdom of the heart, which everyone carries. Now, when that wisdom comes up and feeds the creative process of your vision and your decisions, when that wisdom comes to the surface, then you make much better quality decisions, obviously. Get that? Now, this is easy for us because we practice the most important practice or most effective practice in tapping into your wisdom, which is meditation. Because in meditation, as you know, you leave the mind and come back to the heart, the center. And then you begin to feel, you hear the subtle promptings of the heart. And that throws up ingredients into your vision. Ah, now I see clearly. And that's creative. That throws up the wisdom to, no, I don't feel that's right. I want to, that feels more right. I don't know why, but it feels more right. And so your decisions become easier, faster, and more accurate. But then someone came along and said, wait a minute, there's another energy. There's another energy. And this influences your thoughts, feelings, decisions, relationships, everything. Another level of intelligence. And they started talking about emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence actually is an oxymoron. And for those of you who don't know what an oxymoron is, it's a contradiction in terms. In other words, when someone says it's a holy war, how can a war be holy? Or some people say military intelligence. How can the military be intelligent? So when you're emotional, actually you'll notice you are not intelligent. You're not able to do the right thing in the right way using what you know. Because when you are emotional, it creates havoc in your consciousness. There's no stability. There's lots of fluctuation. You're easily influenced by the world around you. So there's no stability. So the difference between rational and emotional, I'm sure you're all familiar with the professor, academic professor, school, university, brilliant mind, talk all day long, fantastic, complex formula, and absolutely brilliant thinker. But take that professor to a cocktail party, stand them 6 inches from another human being, and they cannot do it. Their own emotions are raging out of control, they're reacting, and they're not sensitive to the feelings and emotions of the other. They say the wrong thing, they do the wrong thing, they're awkward, and they're reactive. So they have very high IQ, brilliant mind, but very low EQ. Do you all know someone a bit like that? A bit like yourself sometimes? Because anytime you are reactive, then you are not creative in the true sense. Whenever you react, it means the emotion has been triggered and it takes over your thoughts, feelings, and behavior. You see, and that's not being creative. Actually, if anything, it's the opposite. It's sabotaging your creativity, your ability to have a clear vision, to make wise decisions, and to communicate with precision. Yeah. So this is emotional intelligence, which really means knowing I'm beginning to feel irritated. This is irritation. I know it's coming. And knowing that it's I'm creating it, no one else, it's I'm responsible, and knowing that it's possible to put it to one side and calm down. Now there's emotional intelligence. I'm aware and I know the emotion I'm creating, and I know that I'm responsible, and I know how to put it to one side so it doesn't interfere. So I'm using what I know in the right way, the right situation, at the right time. That's intelligence. But most people, they're not aware. They're not aware. The moment they become emotional, what's going on? What's happening? Oh my God, you shouldn't have said that. They shouldn't have done that. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so happy and excited. Excited and happy. Happiness is excitement. And it all gets mixed up. And it interferes with our consciousness, our creativity, basically, because our consciousness is innately creative. So the deepest level of intelligence, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, because that's why you're here, is called SQ. And SQ is spiritual intelligence. And spiritual intelligence is it's that little voice in your head. And I don't know if you ever have this little voice. And it kind of whispers in the background and it says, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Actually, what am I doing here? Which is code for, what is the purpose of me being here? Now, most people have this little voice whispering all day long. Most frequently when they get to their desk in their office. And the little voice says, what am I doing here? what am I doing here? And that's the voice that says, I've not yet learned to create meaningfulness. Yeah, I'm not able to yet make meaning of what's happening in front of me, what's happening around me, even what's happening within me. We are all makers, creators of meaningfulness. We have the capacity to ascribe meaning to whatever we see, whatever is going on. And that's why when someone has spiritual intelligence, you'll find they are never shocked by anything. They're never shocked by it, never surprised by anything. They never go, wow, wasn't that terrible? That was shocking. No, they'll never do that, because they're able to ascribe meaning to whatever is going on around them. And we're able to do that now as we watch the world. And most of our training is not the right word, but our awakening is being able to look at the world falling apart and realize it's just an aspect of creation. So whatever falls apart around us, whatever seems to be going wrong from the point of view of other people, from the media, they're like, oh my God, it's terrible, the government's falling apart, the weather's falling apart, the climate's falling apart, everything's falling apart. We, from our spiritual intelligence, are able to take all of that and say, no, it's not. It's just part of recreation. Is that right? Just like the tree falls apart in autumn, we don't go, oh my God, the tree's falling apart. Look at the leaves are falling off the tree. Oh my God, the tree's dying. Do we do that? Do we cry when we... No. Because we know that's what happens to trees in the winter. So someone with spiritual intelligence is not disturbed by anything at all. That's quite challenging, isn't it? And you know, when we are disturbed by anything, it means the vision that we were allowing to be created in our consciousness is destroyed. It's crushed. And it's like we have to start again. I have to go and sit quietly again and allow that vision to emerge again into my awareness. That sense of, wow, who I am, what I'm doing here at this time. That awareness of the brightness of me. The moment I go, oh my God, what's going on? That vision has gone. My decision making is skewed by the emotions of, oh my God, what's going on? And so my decisions get the quality of the creation of my decision has gone. Now, the three things, constantly creating all the time, it's in a sense you have no choice. I have no choice but to create these. It's like built into my consciousness. It's just a question of how aware and how well I'm doing it. And what's informing the quality of those three dimensions of creativity, what's informing it is these levels of intelligence. It's a bit false to bring them up here and separate them out, because they're all interconnected within our consciousness. They're all interconnected. And as you know, in these 3 days, we're kind of exploring them all in different ways. Now we're going to look at emotions and emotional intelligence, and we're going to break it down very rationally, slowly, I hope, and see the mechanisms by which we create our emotions. In the process, you will have aha moments. You all know what an aha moment is. Celia mentioned it earlier. And really, an aha moment is the recognition at the deeper level, the intuitive level, a recognition, aha, I see that, I get that, I know that, I already know that. And there'll be moments of aha. But to see where emotion is coming from, and emotion is the energy that sabotages everything, sabotages your vision, sabotages your decisions, sabotages your ability to communicate clearly, to see where this energy is coming from, we obviously need to go behind to see what causes the emotion, what causes disturbance. And that's when we take one step back behind the emotion to see the place where it is created. And that means our old and dear friend, three letters beginning with E, the ego. And it's true for me, and I don't know, I'd be interested to talk to you afterwards, is that when you understand the ego, you understand almost everything. It allows you to understand almost everything that's going on around us, locally and globally. So, a little challenge for you. I'm going to ask you to take a moment to reflect on your own, and how would you define the ego? What is the ego for you? How would you describe it, define it? What's your way of saying it? No right way, there's no right answer, but how would you see it? Can I ask you to do it on a little bit of paper first, just reflecting? Take a moment to sort of say, well, okay, the ego, what is the ego for me? Just to take a moment and describe it, define it in your own way, in your own words. It's good. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. It's good. Anyone? Ego? Anyone? Yes. It's our own identity we create for ourselves. Okay. It's great. Inevitable junction. An inevitable junction. So the ego is an inevitable junction. So you're on the road and then there's a junction. Is that the idea? Okay. 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 Fantastic. Yes. Identification of self with what you like, okay? I first and always. Always me first. Me, me, me. Yes. The power that I have over myself. The ego is the power I have over myself. Fantastic. Shout. I'm always right. That's what the ego says. That's what it says. Shout. A negative attribute. So the ego is just an attribute which is negative. Fantastic. Yes. Attachment to the wrong image of myself. Wonderful. Yes. I and my. That's how we kind of sometimes refer to it. The I and my. Yes. My reactive nature. So the reactiveness comes from the ego. That's the natural or unnatural part that emerges, yes. The perception of myself that I recreate based on not knowing myself. I think I get that, yeah. You've had one? Yes. How I present myself to everyone around me, yeah? It's great. So ego is a code of conduct and values. So ego is a code of conduct and my values. My values, okay. The one who doesn't like to change themselves. Do you change? Do you change? Is that true? You change? Transform. Change or transform? Yes. Judgmental. The ego is very judgmental. That's what it does. That's what it does. Yes. I'm always right. That's what it says. That's what the ego says. But what is it? I can't hear you, you have to shout. You can shout. Strong emotions. So ego is just strong emotions that put stuff all around me. I've lost you now. You can't, you have to speak out. You see, I've got you, strong emotions, stuff around you. Yes. To preserve the existing. Ego is the preservation of the existing. You've had yours. You want another one? You only have to make up your mind, you know. Okay? Fantastic. Concepts, beliefs that are not real. An illusionary self that sucks down the mind so the ears don't hear. Wow. Fantastic. So, yes, one more. Sorry? Speak up. A negative defense mechanism. That's what the ego does. It defends, it starts to defend, but what is it that's defending? The guardian of weak self-respect. It's so interesting, isn't it? We have sort of 20 answers, and none of the similarities, but they're all kind of a little bit different. And in some cases, they're a lot different. It's okay, I can't go on. Okay, one more. One more, shout. It's a problem child. Yeah, another one. Yeah. It's a problem child. And for me, it's the mechanism that's really interesting to watch. And the challenge is watching how it interferes with absolutely everything in my consciousness. And some of you who have done this with me before, you'll know how I kind of like to define the mechanism. And ego is the moment I get attached to anything. Ego and attachment are the same thing. It's the attachment to an image. Attachment to an image. Now sometimes in here I put the wrong image, but that's for beginners. Because in reality, it's attachment to any image. Yeah, but sometimes I say the wrong image of my self. So really, it's attachment to an image. And if you notice, when you get attached to any image, then you lose your sense of identity in the attachment. The attachment to and identification with. Identification with an image. Or if you want, the wrong image of myself, or belief about myself, or belief, because we get very attached to our beliefs. That's good. And we do this hundreds of times every day, even as very spiritual Brahma Kumars and Kumaris. We tend to have this as our deepest sanskar, our deepest habit, conscious and subconscious. And it could be the simplest thing that we get attached to, as you know. It's not the object that we get attached to. You know, I can hold on to an object. You can say, Mike, you're very attached to that flip chart. But no, my hand is attached, but I'm not. Yeah, my hand is very attached, but I'm not attached to it really. You can have it. But if I start going, oh, don't take it away, don't take it away, that means I'm attached to it. And that's taking place in my consciousness. It's taking place in my mind. Driving the car down the road, I get past the BMW dealership, there's the new car. Oh, I'll have one of those, thank you. In my new car, 6 weeks later, I'm driving down the road and I'm saying, hey, look at me, no, look at the car, it's fantastic, isn't this a great car? And in that moment, I'm not just attached to the car, I've lost my sense of identity in the object, in the car. And then you can prove that, you can prove it very easily, you just have to take a coin down the paintwork of the car, and how does Mike feel? Mike feels very, very angry. I'm very angry. So my vision is gone, I'm making terrible decisions, and all I'm communicating is pain. So Mike is in pleasure or pain? Mike's in pain. So who creates my pain? Who creates my anger? Me. It's not the other guy. So very rationally, very logically, you scratch the car, and I feel pain. Therefore, I think I am a car. Do you see it? Now, most people would go, but that's natural. It's natural to be upset. Someone's damaged property. And so they justify their pain by saying it's natural. And the moment they do that, they're not attached to the car, they're attached to their belief that anger is natural. Do you get it? So they've gone a little bit deeper. Before it was just attachment to the image of the car, but now they have a belief that they're attached to, that it's natural. And so the ego goes just a little bit more subtle. And the mechanism, the mechanics of this is quite simple, especially for us to see. Here's your consciousness, and in your consciousness you have a mind. Everyone has a mind. And you know how the mind works. You've seen these cars now where if you drive up to the traffic lights and you stop the car, the engine switches off automatically. Have you been in one of those cars? It's economy. It's a green car to save petrol. So as soon as you stop at the traffic lights, the car engine shuts down. And as soon as you put your foot on the accelerator, just a little bit, it fires up into life again. Have you ever been in one of those? Have you seen one of those cars? It's the latest, I guess, in engine technology. And the mind is a little bit like that. The mind is what you create when there's an impulse to have a thought. As soon as the energy of consciousness wants to form into a thought, the mind comes into existence. If you don't think, you have no mind. Do you get it? So as soon as there's the impulse to think, then the mind comes up like a screen, and we have the capacity to notice what we are creating on the screen. Just like the painter can stand back and so, I bring the image of the car through my consciousness. There's the car sitting out on the road. I bring it into my consciousness, and I put the image, the idea, up on the screen of my mind. Because I'm having thoughts about the car. I have to make decisions about the car. To wash it, to put petrol in it, and so on. So I bring up the mind, and I put the image of the car in my mind. But the mistake I make is I go into my mind. Instead of staying centered, I leave my center and I go into the mind, and then I leave even the mind and I go into the image that's on the mind, and I lose my sense of self in the image. Not in the car, but in the image of the car. Yeah. And then someone comes along and they scratch the car. Now, because there's attachment, I'm attached. My sense of self is lost in the car, and that's what attachment is. That's where attachment happens. Then someone touches the car, and it's as if they touch me. And I take it very personally. And there is pain. I'm in pain. Suffering, actually. I'm suffering. And the suffering is called anger. So if I don't want the anger, if I don't want the pain, then I have to learn to not be attached, but be detached. Or, if you prefer, non-attached. Yeah. So if someone scratches the car and I'm not attached, no problem. No anger, no pain. I sit quietly and I just watch the scratch. There it is, the scratch. Fantastic, what a beautiful scratch. I love that scratch. You going to do another one? The other one for me? Yeah? Easy, isn't it? Yes. Say, speak up. Sorry? We just don't buy the car. Oh, but then you'd have nothing. You'd be walking through life with no clothes, no car, no house. You'd have nothing. And I don't think that's very practical, is it? Mm-hmm. So, you see the mechanism? And I've used a very crude example, a very material example, but as you know, what we get attached to, concepts, ideas, images, is what we create in our mind and then lose ourselves in. And as long as I'm doing that, I'm not able to create clear vision, a really rich, deep vision of... Do you see? Does that make sense? So, we don't just sit there, we don't say nothing. It's not that we allow the world to burn our house down and take away our cars and destroy everything. It's not that I sit there and do nothing. I don't say nothing. I will have choices. I'll have choices as to how I go forward. You always have choices. I could pay for the scratch. I could get the insurance to pay for it. I could sell the car with a scratch. I could drive the car with a scratch on it. There's always possible ways forward. But why can't I be creative? Why can't I create those possibilities? Because I'm angry, because I'm emotional. And whenever you get emotional about anything, whether you express it or you keep it in, it destroys your ability to be creative. And it's very tiring as well. It's like the misuse of the energy of our consciousness, and it's what makes us kind of tired inside. So, practical example. In service meetings in the center, you have service meetings, and one person says they're going to take care of the new course, they're going to design the new course and deliver the new course to the new students next week, and of course they don't show up, there's no course, nothing is delivered, nothing is created, and most people in the center, they get what? They get a little bit. You've let me down. You've let us down. You are not doing what you should do. You said you would do this. And suddenly we have an energy going around which is not conducive to serving the world. Why? Because all the other people in the meeting have an image in their mind. And the image is that person designing and delivering the new course. And when they don't, do you see it? And because I'm attached to an image of the other person doing what they say. So if I wasn't attached to an image, if I was detached, then we wouldn't get upset with the other person. What would we say? We wouldn't get grumpy, frustrated, irritated, angry. What would we say instead? We would not become emotional. We would ask, why? Was there something in the way? Was there a reason? Was there an obstacle? Did you have not enough time? Were we not clear in our communication? In other words, I will seek to understand. So, I will create precise communication appropriate to the situation, as opposed to reacting, suffering emotionally, and throwing energy, emotional energy, into the relationship. But that detachment does not mean I do not care. So it means that I don't react, and that means that I can care, if that makes sense. Because what is understanding? Understanding is caring. Was there a problem? Was there something in the way? Was it something I said? Was it something we didn't do? So I seek to understand, and that's the foundation of caring. But only possible when I am detached. You put in reports the right decision and someone challenges it, okay? And you know their decision is going down the wrong road. No? Okay, let me stop you there. There are no wrong roads. Just, sorry, off a bit? No, speak up a bit. You work for social services, yes? So they made the decision and they said it's not right. You're wrong, they're right. Yeah. I am trying to grasp the question. Yeah, I know. Hold on a second. Just a second, yeah. Okay, all right. So you wrote a report and you recommended how to meet a client's needs, and that was rejected, and they're now going down a different road, and so what do you do? That's the question. So you inquire, is there a reason you're going down that road? No. You ask them. They're making the decision. So you ask them, why have you made this decision? Okay, so they told you. So then you accept the decision, or you ask them, would it be useful if I had some input into the decision-making process? Yeah. So then, if the decision is being made at a higher level than you in the organization, then it's out of your hands. You've made your contribution, you've offered your opinion, your insight, whatever you call it, you've made that offering, and they still want to go down that road, so that's fine, that's okay. So 2 weeks later, so the lady was admitted into hospital. So you wanted to prevent that, and you offered your advice, you offered your decision, and you couldn't prevent it because they went down that road, which is their decision, which is due to their position. So you have to let go. It is. It's just your attachment. If you react to that person going into hospital, then you're attached to that image of that person going this way, not that way, if that makes sense. So you know the answer. You've got it. So you ask me the question, you already know the answer. It's good. So, and this is what happens, is very simply, what do we say? We say, what do we identify with most? What do you identify with most? And it's the belief about yourself. And over your conversations, over lunch, over dinner, over coffee, you'll ask each other mostly, not just where you come from, but what do you do? Is that right? You ever ask someone, what do you do? And then you say what you do. And in those moments, you define yourself by your belief about what you do. And it's just a belief. I'm an architect. I think I'm a great architect. People say, Mike, did you really build that rubbish down at the end of the street? And because I think I'm a great architect, I'm sad. And then I get angry. And then I get, I'm not talking to you again. I get scared. So there's three emotions, sadness, anger, and fear, because I believe I am an architect. And it happens in seconds, just in seconds. But what's the truth? Is architect what I am or what I do? So are you what you do? Is that what you are? Are you what you do? Because when you believe you are what you do, you have an image that you're creating in your mind about what you do. And you're identifying, you're attaching to and identifying with. That image is shaping you. It's shaping you. And so that's why the simplest definition of the ego is just a mistake. The ego is just a mistake. In other words, I mistake myself for something that I'm not. Or in the language of New Scotland Yard, a case of mistaken identity. That's all it is. Now, it sounds simple in theory, and yeah, I get that, and that's the basis of our spiritual journey in many ways, but it happens so quickly in our consciousness that it takes us over. It takes us over. So every day, I get the chance to see the process and the mechanism. Every day. Where there is ego, there is attachment. There is attachment. Where there is attachment, any attachment which takes place within my consciousness, there is something called resistance. So if you feel yourself resisting anyone or anything at any time, right now or later today, if you just notice yourself resisting anything, then you'll notice behind it there is something you're attached to. And that's an image that you are losing yourself in, on your mind. for 1 second, 10 seconds, 10 hours, 10 years. Where there is resistance, any resistance to anything, anyone, anywhere, you'll notice the presence of the emotion of fear. Whether it's subtle anxiety, a little tension, just a little worry about something, any fear. And so where there is fear, there is ego. Now the world doesn't like that. They don't like that. The world likes to believe that a bit of fear is okay. And that's why the world kind of believes that a little bit of ego is okay. They say the ego is natural. They say the ego is the driver. It's going to drive you through your life. You need the ego to be motivated, to be ambitious. And so they justify fear. That fear is okay. But we know that fear is, it's a killer. It kills. It's the moment you feel yourself contracting. You know when you feel, when you contract, oh my goodness. You know? And we know that our natural state, because you've already had the vision of yourself being totally open, expanding to embrace everything and everyone. That's the vision that we have. But the moment I go, now why do I go, because in my own consciousness, in my mind, I've lost myself for a second in something on my mind. Yeah. So when you see this process, then you begin to understand why people do what they do. So if you do watch the news, if you do open a newspaper, you just see a lot of people resisting other people, basically. Is that true? What's the news? What's a movie? What's anything broadcast in the media is just people resisting other people. Why? Because there's attachment. Why? There's fear. So wherever you see resistant behavior, it's always driven by a moment of anxiety, tension, worry, different forms of fear. And wherever there's any fear, it means the self is trapped in the mind, in an image that it's attached to. And the attachment to that image is shaping the self's identity. And there you have the ego. So you watch for the behavior. You'll notice the presence of fear. Look behind the fear, and you'll always find the attachment. Danger. Ego at work. Ego at work. So what kind of things do people do? What do you do when you are scared? When there is fear in your consciousness, what kind of things do you do? What do we do? Blaming? Complaining? Defending? Running? Withdrawing? Lying? Fighting? Arguing? Do you ever argue? No, you never argue. Arguing? When you argue, it means you have an opinion, and at the center of your opinion is your belief. A belief, just a simple little idea that you believe in, and as soon as you hear the other person's belief, it's not Tai Chi, it's I'm ready to fight because I see their belief as a challenge to not my belief, but to me. It's a personal challenge. So I notice the emotion coming up, and I start to argue. When you argue, there's two emotions. Two emotions, have you noticed? A little anger and a little fear. A mixture of anger and fear. And they're not coming from that person, they're coming from within. And so how to resolve a conflict, how to release someone from their behavior in an instant, it's very easy. It's very, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen it that way before. I could understand that, maybe. I have a different point of view, but okay, yeah, I kind of get that. Okay, see you later, bye. So the moment I don't resist, then there's no conflict. The moment I don't resist, there is no conflict. Yeah. And of course, why should I resist? Because am I a belief? Am I a belief? Is that what I am? Is that what I am? It's not, I'm not a belief. I'm not an idea. I'm not a belief. I'm not an image. Actually, what am I? What are you? Not an idea. Not a belief. Not an image. So what am I? Are you a BK? That's an idea, isn't it? A soul? Are you a soul? Isn't that a concept? Soul? Soul is an idea? Who are you? What are you? What are you? Actually, there's the question. What am I? A spiritual being, da-di-da-di-da. But it's concepts. Ideas. Is that what I am? Because if someone says I'm not a spiritual being, what do I do? What do you mean? Of course I am. I might not say it, but inside, I'm reacting, I'm resisting. I might be quite good at going, yes, it's okay, my band, you know, I'm a BK. So. But inside, no. So I'm peace. What is peace? Some would say I'm peace. What is peace? Is that an idea or a concept? It's interesting, isn't it? Do you know where I arrive? I'm no one. That's about as close as I can get to nothing. To no image. I'm no one. I have nothing. And I'm going nowhere. Did you see it? But it's okay to, I'm a VK or I'm a spiritual being. It's okay. It's not wrong. It's just notice that it's a subtle image. It's a subtle idea. It's something you're creating. And then using to shape yourself, to define yourself. But maybe, actually, that's not what I am. Sometimes people ask, well, if it's the wrong image you identify with, what's the right image? And for me the answer is no image. Because the consciousness, me, I have no image. You have no image. You are the creator of images. And the creator is not the creation. Do you see it? And it's tremendously freeing. I find it tremendously freeing, ultimately, to really see. No, I'm just the one who creates and watches, creates and watches, creates and watches. The images come within me, but they're not me. Wow, they come within me, but they're not me. Tremendously freeing. Did you get it? Some of you are looking at me a little strangely. So, let's have a bit of fun. Let's have a bit of fun. And it's great to kind of see the practical application of this. And I have a little exercise here, which you can do quickly or slowly, or you can do extensively. Maybe I could ask one person to come, two people to come. Can I have two volunteers? Now, what you do is you don't hand them out one at a time, but you just go along the line and just put a few at the start of each line and then pass them along. Is that okay? So if you go to the back, excuse me, what's your name? Can you go to the back and start at the back? That would be great. And then just pass one along and pass it around. And eventually they kind of get there. Everyone gets one. It's good. And this is a great little exercise. Celia, did I have all of them here? Or there are more down there? There was enough here. Okay, great. Thank you. It's great. And you'll see some hands down here. And those are the people who don't have one. That's it. Do you want to come to the front? Do you want to come to the front? Just down to the front here. That's great. Thank you. Yep. That's it. It's good. Coming your way. It's coming your way. And then over the other side here. Over the other side. That's it. Just around here. Fantastic. So this is a great little awareness exercise. That's all it is. Just an awareness exercise. And the more you do it, the more you begin to notice, and the key word is notice, how you fall into an egotistical state, and the more you begin to understand why other people do what they do. It's very difficult to see what people are attached to. It's very difficult to see people's fears, but the behavior is very visible. It's very visible. So you're going on the side that has the list at the top. There's a list at the top. Let's just have this for a second. Thanks very much. It's great. It's this side here. Becoming aware of the presence of ego. Becoming aware of the presence of ego. That side of the page. And you'll see all the examples of the behaviors which are driven by the ego. Criticizing, possessing, complaining, blaming, many different behaviors. There's not much left, actually, once you've been through them all. Not much left to do. And then some examples down the left-hand side, criticizing. And have you ever sat in a meeting and someone criticizes your idea or someone else's idea? And to criticize is to attack. You're attacking. It's a form of attack. And why do we attack anything? Because there is fear. And the fear is, in this example, I think your idea is not very good. And the fear is, my idea won't be accepted. It'll be rejected. And yours will be accepted. So what am I attached to? I'm attached to my idea. Actually, the image of my idea. The image. Yeah. And that's in my own mind. And so that's what's shaping me. Sometimes people walk in and they go, hey, I have a new idea here. I'm really enthusiastic. I'm going to leave it with you. And if you use it, great. If you don't, it's okay. Anyway, I'm off to get on with the rest of my life and make some more ideas. So they're very detached. Whereas people are very attached. They walk in, they go, oh, this is the one. Oh, this is fantastic. I've never used that. That's a terrible idea. Come on, use this, use this. I'm exaggerating a bit. But my energy is very different. My consciousness is very different. In the one hand, I'm trapped in my idea. In the other hand, I'm free. I'm free within myself. And that freedom allows me to be more creative. Because if I'm not free, I can't create. And remember, the purpose is to be creative. Number two, possessing. Did I see you with that person at the party last night? You were with them for 22.3 minutes, weren't you? You like them, don't you? You're not going to leave me. Please don't leave me. Don't go away. So what am I attached to? Attached to the other person. And so, actually, I'm not attached to the other person, I'm attached to the image of the other person. Have you ever noticed how you love someone more when they're not there? Have you ever noticed that? Yeah? You know, you talk to your friends about your loved one. And you talk, oh, you should meet them, they're beautiful, oh, they're perfect. I love them so much. And then they walk in the door, and what's the first thought? Not you again. Yeah. Why is that? Why? Why do you tend to love someone more when they're not there? Because? because you're attached to an image of the person. Because you first, when you first meet the person, that first connection, you create an image of them. Where? In your own mind. You send that image into your memory, and every time you think and talk about that person, you bring up the image, and they're perfect. Aren't they just perfect? And then the reality walks in the room, and if reality doesn't fit exactly the perfect image, we start becoming, in English we say grumpy. And we might even say, you know, you've changed. You're not the same anymore. You're not the person I met. I think we should call the lawyers now. You know those moments? And that's because, well, what do we say 10 minutes later? 10 minutes later, we're talking very profoundly with our friends over a coffee, and what do we say? You say, you know, love is just accepting others as they are. You know, and we don't notice the contradiction. And what creates the contradiction? Attachment to an image in my own mind, in my own consciousness. Do you see it? So, three examples there: complaining, blaming, and self-limiting. Could I ask you to have a conversation with your partner and, drawing on your own experience, what's an example of complaining, an example of blaming, and then what was the fear and what was the attachment? See if you can see what the attachment was. It's very easy once you get going, and once you learn, once you get the sequence, then you begin to interpret what's going on around you very differently, very differently. Do you want to try that? Just with your partner, conversation, little workshop, and see if you can find examples from your own life. It's very easy once you get going. Okay, let's do 10, 9, 8. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Everybody there? Don't worry if you haven't done all three, it's okay. So let's do a quick run through. If it was smaller and we had, I'd like to get your examples, but shouting out. Maybe someone on the front here, anyone got an example of complaining? Complaining? Go on, complaining. Yeah, just shout it out. Shout. You're talking to them. You're on the phone talking to them all the time. Oh, I'm fed up with it. Stop it. And then the fear? So you're losing their attention. They're not giving you enough attention. And so what's the image you're attached to? You're attached to getting their attention, being the center of their attention, which really means getting their respect, I guess. It's good. Traffic control? Complaining. This soup is cold. How dare you give me cold soup? And so, what's my fear? The fear is I'm going to have to eat cold soup. So what's the image in my mind that I'm attached to? Bowl of nice hot soup. Very simple. But that doesn't mean to say I say nothing. What do I say? Excuse me, the soup is a little cold. Could you heat it? Thank you. See you in a moment. That's not complaining. That's giving feedback and making a request. Whereas complaining, I'm suffering because this soup is cold. I'm emotionally suffering. Do you see the difference? Whereas giving feedback and making a request, no suffering. I'm just making a request. Do you see the difference? One is very attached, I've got to have my soup. The other one's, hey, sometimes the universe brings you cold soup. Isn't that true? Isn't that reality? Yeah, I think so. Anyone got blaming? Anyone blaming on the front line here? Anyone blaming? Yeah? So might George try to take me away from my ego? This is getting personal, isn't it? You're going to make this personal. And so the fear? That I'll be successful. And the image you're attached to? The image you're attached to? that people will stop appreciating you as you were before. In other words, they won't like the new you. So in other words, you like people to like the old egotistical you. So you're attached to people's behavior towards you when you've got a big ego. That's really what you're saying, isn't it? We need to talk afterwards, I think. So when people blame others, they usually point the finger and say, it's their fault, which really means they're scared people might think it's my fault. And what's the image I'm attached to? I'm Mr. Perfect. I never get anything wrong. I always do things right. And so that's the image I'm attached to. Some people, when things go wrong, they hold up their hand and they say, yeah, that was me. I take responsibility for that. And they're very honest. So the opposite of ego is humility. They have the humility to be honest. And usually that attracts respect. I think so. Sometimes. And so self-limiting, anyone got self-limiting? Self-limiting means I can't. I'm not able, I'm no good, I can't do that. Shout. I refused the promotion of the job. Why? I was afraid I might have to work harder. Oh, yes. Oh, I can't do that, I might have to work harder. What are you attached to? What's the image you're attached to? And you were afraid you might fail. So what's the image you're attached to? So the safety of the job you're in other words, the way you use your time just now, the freedom you have to use your time just now, because you might lose that, or you might fail and be seen as a failure, and you're attached to the image of being successful? Maybe. Sometimes it's the fear of failure. More often it's the fear of success. We fear success, actually more than we fear failure. It's a little bit more subtle. When I was 10, I went skiing and I fell down and I hurt my leg, and I came to the conclusion, I can't ski. So I create a little image in my mind, I'm a not skier. I see myself as a not skier. 30 years later, you say, Mike, we're going skiing this weekend. In comes the word skiing, out comes the words, I can't do that. And I'm scared to come skiing because I'll have to shatter this little image. I'll have to be more today than I was yesterday. And I like it in here, this little image. This is me. This is, I'm not capable. I'm very comfortable. This is my comfort zone. And you're asking me to step, oh no, I like it in here. Do you recognize this? Yeah, this is the ego too. Sometimes we think ego is someone with a big head, but it's also someone with a small self-image. And that's what most of us suffer from here. That's what Baba's saying. Come on, wake up to your greatness. Not in an egotistical sense, oh, I'm great, but your capacity to expand and be all that you can be. But we go, oh no, I know I can't do that. Oh, I couldn't be like that. I couldn't be like this. And we limit ourselves. This is a great exercise, fantastic exercise to do. On your own, grab a coffee and go through all these behaviors. And you begin to see and understand why you behave the way you do, why other people behave the way they do. And you begin to see what's in the way. Because you know the mind is like a screen, it's like a canvas. But the mind is also like a window. It's like a window. And you know when the window of a building is clear, then the light gets out and the light gets in and out. It's absolutely clear. But as soon as you put something in front of the window, like a curtain, or the window gets dirty, the light can't come in, and my light, the light can't get out. And so the mind is like a window. As soon as I put something on it, and I go into it, it's like I'm blocking the light. And that's what stops, well, what does Baba say? Man, mana, bhav, give your mind to me. But if I'm busy with ideas and images and beliefs and objects, then I'm busy blocking the light. And so his light can't get in. I can't receive those vibrations. And also, I'm trapped. My energy's trapped and shaped by what's on my mind. So detachment simply means coming back to the center and letting the window be clear. Be clean and clear. Yeah, and then Baba's light gets in and my light gets out. And there's a connection. Sounds easy. But it's challenging. And the reason it's challenging is it's not just little things, ideas and beliefs we get attached to. It's stories. Because every little idea, belief, image comes as part of a story. The story that I then identify with. The most common, of course, is your history. And you hear yourself telling other people your history. Do you hear what happened to me last week, last year? I did this, they said, and I did that, and then I did this. And sometimes we go to get a job and we hold up our CV and we say, this is my history, this is what I've done. Look, aren't I clever? I've done this and this and this. Then I did that and that and that. There I am. Fantastic. That's me. No, it's not. It's not me. It's a history. It's a story. And it's a story that's created in the mind. And I'm not a story. Are you a story? Is that what you are? The story of you? No, it's just a record of actions in the past. But most of our conversations with each other is about telling each other our stories. And in the stories is an identity which is not true. It's not me. See, and we have different levels, different kinds of stories. There's the story of my family relationships, my mom and dad, and my brothers and sisters and my friends. And I've got that story when I'm talking about, my mum's great, my dad's awful, and I've got lots of friends. Can I tell you what they said and what I said? And now I'm in the story, running in my mind and through my mouth. So, is that what I am? Am I the story? No, it's just a story. And then there's the story of your personality. You know, the kind of person. Sometimes you say to people, well, I'm a bit of a worrier. You know, I worry a lot. Yeah, but I must have learned it from mum or dad. I'm a bit of a worrier. And then I get a bit sad sometimes. I'm a bit sad. And suddenly I'm telling a story of my persona. And I'm losing myself in the story. But am I a story? No, I'm not a story. I'm me. I'm the teller of the story. I'm the creator of the story. You see, it's like watching a movie. You know, when you watch the movie, it's just a story, flickering lights on the screen, and the guy in the movie, he loses something and starts crying. What do? We start crying. Oh my God, oh my God. Now, I haven't lost anything. It's the guy in the movie that's lost something, and it's not even real. It's a movie. But I'm crying. In other words, I'm giving an illusion the status of reality in my own consciousness. So that's the movie in the cinema. Now what about the movies that I'm playing in my consciousness? The stories that I run, the movies that I run. Is that what I am? Am I a story? Are you a story? No. But if you notice, as you run the story and you tell the story, this happened to me, then that happened, and then they said this and they did that, then my sense of identity is lost. I lose myself in something that I'm not. We're kind of doing it kind of all the time, really. Do you see it? And this is the ego at work. And as long as I'm running a story in my mind, then I'm not free. The spirit is trapped. I am trapped in the story. Do you get it? So there's a nice comment. The drama is a story. Yeah. So, So imagine sitting in the cinema. Is it possible to sit in the cinema or switch on the TV? Good workshop. And watch the story. But don't lose awareness of yourself as the watcher. Notice the second you lose awareness of the room, you lose awareness of the chair, you lose awareness of your body, you lose awareness that you're watching, and suddenly you're in the movie. Have you ever noticed that process? And you're up and down and up and down according to the story. Now, the reality is the movie's not taking place in the screen, it's taking place in my mind. I bring it in and I run it in my mind, and I'm watching and going into my mind and I'm living it in my mind. And I'm going, and I'm up and down, and it's manipulating me. So what is the drama? The drama actually is not a story. The drama is a realization. It's a realization. It's seeing with my real eye, not an imaginary movie, a story about Lakshmi came and Narayan and Radhi and Krishna, and then the Golden Age, and then there was the Silver Age. That's not the drama. The drama is realizing that I have an innate awareness of how this energy around me called the world moves. How it dances, how it changes, how it fluctuates. I have an awareness of that, but I don't identify with it. I don't want, I'm going to be a beautiful deity in the Golden Age. I can see myself now dancing. No, that's like a fantasy. And it's like I'm consciously trying to create it, just like I'm getting lost in the creation of Hollywood on the screen. But what does it really mean, my relationship with drama? Is to be able to see and interpret what's going on around me as just a scene in a drama. Yeah, it's just a scene. It's changing, it's passing, it's moving, it's changing, it's passing. And the more I see that, the less I'm occupied with that, the more that knowingness comes from within me, the heart of me. The true vision of me is allowed to come to the surface, and I realize who I am in that context. So it's not like a fairy story that I'm trying to create. It's like a way of seeing exactly what's happening around me and not getting lost in it. Well, you know, the first step of meditation, detached observation. Detached observation. So now, can I ask you to grab a piece of paper? Just a little piece of paper? Do you have a piece of paper? Just in a blank page. And I'd like you to write down. Could you write down, as a final little exercise, we'll finish in a few moments. We won't go to 1 o'clock. Probably in about 15 or 20 minutes we'll finish. And we'll just have a bit of a break before lunch. But could I ask you just to reflect on this morning, and what questions are you left with? What would be two questions left unanswered? Or what's not clear from this morning? What's not clear? Could you express what's not clear as a question? Yeah, so there's two things that are not clear from what you've heard or what we've explored this morning. What's still not clear for you? Could you write that down? And then could you write it clearly, very clearly in handwriting, in your own language, very clearly. What's not clear? What is still vague? Good. So you've all got two questions. Maybe some have more. Two is fine. And then could you find one other person who speaks your language? One other person. You have to find a partner. And what you're going to do with your partner is ask them those questions. And they are going to answer your questions with tremendous clarity and understanding. Everything I've said this morning, you already know. You're already aware of within your consciousness. So as they ask you those questions, you are going to answer them as if you know the answer. You understand? So they're going to draw out of you what you already know. Doesn't matter if it's right or wrong or good or bad, but they're going to ask you those questions, and then you answer them, and then you ask them your questions, and then they will answer yours. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Yeah? So no right or wrong answers, but imagine you know the answer to the question you're being asked, and then just answer it as clearly as you can. Make sense? This means yes, this means no. Fantastic. So with the person next to you, just turn to them and ask them your two questions. Take your time, no hurry, and then go the other way. Change over. And if you have the same questions, then have a conversation about that question. Okay? You know how to talk to each other? So turn and face the person next to you, same language, and answer the other questions as if you knew, as if you were an authority. Good, let's do 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the reason I was asking you to do that is to engage, basically, because it's so easy to hear the theory and someone else's perspective, but it doesn't really make that much difference until you actually, you understand, you engage with it. And sometimes, you know, when someone asks you, how many teachers, many teachers here? You know, and ask anyone who's taught, and I would always recommend you start teaching fast, is that you start saying things you don't know you knew. Does anyone have a moment like that? Did you answer in a way that you thought, wow, I didn't know I knew that? Have you ever had that moment when you say something you didn't know you knew? Yeah. And it's just that moment of proof, it's evidence, that deep within you there is an awareness, there's a knowingness which is already there. But you won't access it until you engage directly. And that's very often why I say when I'm coaching someone is to write something every day. Write something. A paragraph about anything spiritual. And when you do that, you begin to engage with a deeper level within yourself. You know, is that traffic control again? Don't think so. Sounds a bit vague. So that was why I was asking you to ask each other, and so at the very least you get a conversation of engagement. So just before we finish, any really deep burning questions on we looked at this morning, the three things you have to create? It's like you don't have a choice. Vision, decision, precision. Life is relationship, precise communication. Life is you choosing the direction you're going to take many times a day, so you have to make decisions. It's your life. And although Baba says, you're surrendered, give responsibility to me, you still have to make little and some large decisions in that context. And then that sense of vision, that sense of who I really am, growing within. Not as a specific image, but as a feeling. The feeling of opening and expanding and embracing. And sometimes it goes like this, and sometimes it comes like this. And what gets in the way of the quality of those creations is the moment you get attached to anything. And that's always in the mind. So what is the mind? am I the mind or do I have a mind? Am I using the mind? Am I getting lost in the mind? So my relationship with mind, and then ideas and thoughts and images. When I get trapped in those, the quality of my creation is diminished. When I get trapped in what's on my mind, I lose my intelligence. I lose my capacity to discern, to see clearly within myself. And that's our old friend, the ego. So, one question here? One question, yeah? Yeah, speak up. Shahani, Ben? Emotional quotient, EQ, yeah. 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 So most of the emotions I talked about was fear and love and so on. Yeah, self-respect and contentment. Yeah, and these are all positive. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, also the right emotion. So tomorrow is really all about emotions. Emotions and feelings. And someone mentioned earlier on the positive. So let me leave you with one thought, and we'll expand on it tomorrow. And that is that in consciousness, there's no positive and negative. In consciousness, there's no good or bad. There's no right and wrong. This is the conditioning that we take from the material world. Duality, polarity. Left, right, up, down, hot, cold, here and there. Yeah. And so it's like we're programmed to think in dualistic terms. But in consciousness, there's no dualism. Consciousness is one. So there's no positive and negative. There's no good and bad. There's no right and wrong. There's just, am I aligned to the truth? Or am I out of alignment? Now, the truth is not a thing. The truth is not an idea, a concept. It's not a philosophy. It cannot be captured in words. The truth is your trueness, your true state of being. What we would call your original, pure state of being. And that's already there at the core. That cannot be lost. Can't be lost. It's already there. But I lose connection. I lose awareness of it. It stops informing my creation. So I start thinking and acting out of alignment with that trueness. Do you see? And then the moment you act out of alignment with it, you get a feeling to tell you you're out of alignment. And what you feel is emotion. So, feelings and emotions, they're different, they're the same. Can you separate them? I think so. But tomorrow. I think tomorrow. I think that's enough. Yeah. So maybe I could ask you, if you wrote your questions down and your handwriting is really clear, if you want to leave it here with me, then tomorrow I'll see if there's common questions, which there usually is, and there's one big question from the brother in front here. Tomorrow we can start with some of those questions and just make sure everything is covered. Yeah? Would you like to do that? And then maybe if we finish with a few moments of silence together, and then you have a little bit of space before wandering to lunch. Yes? No. Emotions are not positive or negative. In consciousness, there's no positive or negative. And emotions are created in consciousness. You get it? So they're not good or bad, not right or wrong. They are a certain form of energy in our consciousness. And tomorrow we'll identify precisely what they are and why they occur. Good. Let's have a moment of quietness together. There's a few ideas to take away and to contemplate for yourself. Part two, same time, same channel, same place, tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock. So just relax your energy for a moment. I know you're already very relaxed in the chair. And then bring your awareness to yourself. And see if you can be aware of yourself. Just being aware. And now I'm going to use my mind to remind myself of my true nature by creating one thought. I am a being of peace. One thought, one idea, one concept. I am a being of peace. One thought in my mind. And then let the thought go. Dissolve that idea. Let it fade into the background. And notice what remains. A feeling, an awareness of peace. The mind is quiet. There are no thoughts. Just the awareness of peace. A silence. A stillness. Silent. As you listen through these ears,